Hey everybody, this is Isaiah. Welcome back to Magic System Monday. I know it's been a while since we've last spoken, but I am back. The world may be burning, but it is not enough to stop me. Even though it's been a little while, I still have been working, to say the least. And one important thing that I noticed that I want to talk about today, one thing that I noticed while I was out and about doing things, was the way a lot of people see there are a lot of people's perceptions on how to build a magic system. There's one key thing that seems off to me. Now, when I say this, keep in mind that what I'm about to tell you that people like to do, it is not inherently bad. Now, typically when building a magic system, you know, I already told you about my three criteria, and I told you there are a bunch of other things that you could always look for in a magic system and different things you could do and execute, especially for when it has to do with, you know, the way the characters behave, because that's usually the most important variable. But, one thing people value in magic systems a lot, even though it's not mandatory, it makes things a lot easier to manage, would be a sort of economy or what have you. Something that limits your use of magic, not just like I mentioned in the other chapters before, where say like Harry Potter, where you have to have your criteria in place in order to use the magic, like your wand and your words and whatnot, your spell words and everything, your focus and everything like that. But in these cases, you tend to have other limiting factors. For instance, the idea of, say, mana, quote unquote, like you see in a lot of fantasy video games, or even in D&D, where you have, say, spell slots, which are, I get the point of them; they're kind of silly, but never mind that. So the idea is to have another, quote unquote, cost, so to speak, and I think that's the word too, cost. Now, typically, that criteria is referred to as limitation. Cost is one very specific type of limitation, and that's what I'm going to be focusing on in today's topic. Now, Isaiah, you say, what's wrong with cost? Cost is good, isn't it? Now, people always say that in order to use magic, you need a cost. People say this, man, you can look all over the internet. I do believe that the most accurate term is limitation. You don't really need a cost, however. Perhaps I'm just noticing this after a long time, but it seems that a lot of people think that you definitively need a cost. Now, whether you do in fact need a cost or not is determined strictly by exactly what your definition of cost is in a magic system. That sounds obvious. It is not necessarily, because I've noticed people's ideas on what a cost is varies, and sometimes they even tend to cherry pick a little bit with what they consider that to be. For instance, they're usually not talking, when I say cost, at least from my experience, when people discuss this with me, they don't seem to be talking about the basic limitation factors that you would find as, like, say, time and experience when learning how to use magic. They don't consider that a cost. And if we take that off, then the problem is that we get a lot of magic systems where that don't fit this criteria, but also work just fine. I'll bring up Harry Potter again. Now, Harry Potter has some other problems, but those problems aren't strictly defined by some kind of cost issue. Some of those ideas could be fixed with a cost issue, but it is not mandatory. Avatar: The Last Airbender, aside from the time and energy, which I talked about earlier, which a lot of people largely consider not to count, then, well, there's no real cost economy, except for the time it takes you to do something. And then there is also, let's see. I would also say, at least from my perception of Doctor Strange in the movies, there were a lot of things that didn't seem to have any meaningful cost to them. You could just do them, because they could channel energy from, you know, other dimensions and whatnot, you know, the atmosphere and everything like that. And then we have Star Wars. Now, don't get me wrong, the Star Wars magic system has gotten worse over time, and it gets especially more difficult to keep track of and understand. It gets kind of flimsy once you start reading all the extra books and comic books and the later movies. But in general premise, there's not a whole lot of cost there either. Now, you can be technical with me. It does technically cost a lot of concentration. It takes a lot of focus to use the Force. However, Consider the fact that that while in a lot of works, a person can definitely get tired after using the Force for a long time. Consider all the showings of the Force we see within the main series and its extensions. That is, the first few movies. Man, even the whole nine, if you want to go with those next three. That's up to you, that's your choice. But whether you're counting the six movies or the nine, and then say Clone Wars, maybe even Rebels, I'm not actually sure. I think there are a couple of occasions of Rebels in which this isn't the case. But generally speaking, people don't just get winded or exhausted after using the Force such that they can't use it again for a time. And by that I mean that ultimately it does not become a strenuous resource, just a bottleneck for using it in the moment. Now, what does this mean? Now, of course, you might say, Isaiah, I think you're misrepresenting the concept of cost. Well, maybe. Again, a lot of people's idea of cost, I have yet to find a lot of consistent definitions for what they mean by, for what people mean by cost. I've even seen some people say that the time it takes to cast in one magic system is a cost when it's not in another. People even bring up to me, say, Full Metal Alchemist. I actually had someone try to explain this to me, in which they told me that the time it takes to use magic in Full Metal Alchemist is somehow inherently more of inherently a cost, when the time it takes for you to focus and use the Force is not. Now, no doubt there are people out there with consistent opinions on this. I do believe that, but it is hard, it's actually very difficult to find. But ultimately, what I've learned is, with the general public definition, not any one person's specific definition, because those can change all over the place, but with the general consensus of what a cost is, you don't really seem to need one. Because they're not truly mandatory, at least not in the way that they're being, you know, discussed. Now, if you know me, you know I probably do talk about, you know, the cost, you know, the whole limitation criteria a lot. And what I think is that this whole cost idea is kind of a false imperative to a degree. I understand it, but it's just that you want to naturally make sure that your magic does not get overused or does not, you know, get really flimsy. So people put these things in place to stop you from using them. Now, this next part, though, is where it gets really interesting to me. And this is why I decided to make this episode, which would be the extreme definition of cost that a lot of people use. Now, if you're doing this, this is not necessarily bad. But take a look at this. When people say cost, again, I mentioned the lighter definitions earlier, but generally we get into things like this. There are a lot of magic systems in which use of the magic, or even overuse of it, at least the basic principle of magic, that is, say, you have a spell or you have an effect that you can use. In order to cast it, you have to, you know, give something in return or whatever. There are a lot of magic systems out there now where that actually hurts you, or there is some dramatic cost. Say, as a necromancer, you have to kill someone to get magic, or say... if I use magic too much, then I destroy my mind or something like that. And these all aren't inherently bad magic systems in any capacity, in any regard. They are perfectly fine. They're perfectly legitimate ways of producing a limit to magic through a cost. However, I've noticed that over time, over the past few years, well, not over the past few years, man, I think this is over the course of my being alive, because I'm kind of young, but this idea of cost that is portrayed in these magic systems, the idea that magic has to hurt you somehow or hurt someone else in terms of a definitive cost, has been blown out of proportion. I know it's always been there, even before I've been alive, but nowadays it seems like it's almost becoming an imperative in some subgenres. To the point that when people are telling me that they think magic should have a cost, they don't mean it should have a cost like a money cost or like an economy. Oftentimes, people think that because they want their magic to be dramatic. That oftentimes they think that instead of just having a cost, like a money cost or something like that, or like an economy-based system in and of itself, they feel that the best way to facilitate the plot is to have magic be explicitly dangerous aside from whatever special result that you get out of it. Now, like I said, well, Isaiah, you said that this wasn't a bad thing, so what's the problem with it? Well, one, it's been blown out of proportion. And when people say cost, you have to... Well, let me put it like this. Let us assume that the person who's listening to this is an expert. You know a lot about magic systems. You have a lot of experience building them. Maybe you're even a writer. Maybe you're even published. You might know what you mean by cost. But the people listening to you do not necessarily know that. So let's look at this from the perspective of like a layman or a person who's new and inexperienced. When you use the term cost, that means you lose something. It doesn't just mean a trade-off. That has a dramatic connotation to it. And that dramatic connotation is facilitated by a lot of the dramatic costs in magic systems that, like we just mentioned earlier, that you see in popular culture. Now, as a result of that, you come off with a kind of idea that in order to make your magic system better, using magic has to hurt. And that is simply not true. You don't believe that. You probably don't believe that at all, in any case. But the problem is the perception that we give off to people when they're listening to us is not the same one as the one that we think we're giving off. And as a result of that, it's kind of limiting. We don't always realize it when we're explaining things to people. But this is why I like to try to be as broad as possible. Which is, there are so many different ways of doing things when it comes to writing and building magic systems. And the way we explain things as either people who have experts or have authority in the genre, at least compared to someone else who's new and is trying to learn from us, if we're not careful, the way we explain things or the way we put things can give them a very big misunderstanding. I know a lot of people don't ever bring this up verbally. Excuse me for the noise, somebody's upstairs. Now, from my experience, people don't always bring this up verbally, but as a person, as a conscious person, I've always seen this to be true, which is people's words or ideas and their explanations to you, especially when they have authority on the matter, they do in fact have weight. They have a psychological weight, so to speak. And when a person's mind is malleable or when they're seeking to learn something, there's a sort of peer pressure that when people explain these things to them, it actually does something to them. It kind of puts them in a jar, so to speak. I just wanted everyone to be mindful of what exactly they mean and how they come off when they say that you have to have a cost in your magic system. Because the newbie will put two and two together and think that, okay, their magic has to hurt somehow. And again, there's nothing wrong with this. It's just that it's not true. There are tons of types of magic systems you can build that you don't have to hurt yourself to use them. You don't have to stab anybody. Your head doesn't have to explode if you use too many spells. And I'm saying all this not to put those down, not that those things are bad, but because the peer pressure that we produce for the people around us makes it seem as if this is some kind of imperative. Now I know that if you universalize the maxim, that is not completely true. There will always be people doing their own thing, but a lot of them could be doing something else with their time that they'll actually enjoy, or you could liberate them to do more with their magic system the way that they see fit, if we didn't give them these false misunderstandings. And I think that's a big problem in any, not only just genres and writing, but also in any sphere where you're learning, explaining things so that people can understand them. That is always a risk that you have. You always have to be very, very careful as a person who's passing on experience and knowledge, how that knowledge comes off to people. Because you always know what you're saying, because you're the expert, so to speak. I mean, assuming that you are the expert. But the people who are listening to you do not know that. Another very, very big problem, another issue that I see with this dramatic cost, so to speak, is the fact that, the fact that it's kind of a crutch. Again, not bad at all, but now that the idea of having some kind of dramatic cost or some kind of hurt to your magic system, is so prevalent, now what we get is people using it to facilitate the plot, Let me put it like this. Naturally, that kind of dramatic cost always has a very specific type of effect on the story and the plot and how everything is set out. It's going to also affect the action economy and the character's behavior, like magic systems tend to do. But it's too limiting. I feel as though a lot of people will seek to use this as a way of producing drama in their combat and their action scenes and things like that, which again, there's no problem with. But I feel that sometimes it's used so much, even in popular culture, that it's kind of a handicap, that writers don't really flex their muscles as much as they should in trying to find other ways to produce drama and to produce conflict within the story. I would bring up something like Naruto, because this is similar. Now, even though you can use chakra or whatever, you can use as much as you have or whatever, apparently using too much chakra can kill you. Now, never mind the fact that this is a little bit of a contradiction with the definition of Naruto's magic system itself. That's beyond the point. But now we have a pretty interesting format that a lot of conflicts can take, where you can basically overdose on magic to do something as powerful, as strong as you... to do something, maybe make something as powerful as you can, and then you die. There's never been anything wrong with that. But the problem comes in the fact that when this dramatic cost system is used as a handicap, it can... This kind of scene becomes more common. It becomes more tired, and it even becomes sort of a given. It kind of becomes a worn-out trope. So my idea is to propose, not that these things are bad. Like I said, I've probably said that like 20 times by now, I'm sorry. But again, just to make it clear, it is not a bad thing. I just feel that it is being used out of proportion. And I feel like there are a lot of things that people can do if we liberate people to come up with other ideas and other ways of executing that conflict and that economy and the world, then all of a sudden we'll have a lot more nuance in the way we build magic systems. A lot of the ideas we have now won't be as tired, because if we keep using them, they'll be worn out. There are a lot of ideas that we've had throughout the century, throughout the ages, when it comes to writing, that were probably some very, very good ideas. But when everyone said, this is the way you're supposed to do it, and then everyone kept doing it that way, well then what happened? They got tired. They got worn out. And a lot of people are just straight up burned out of them. That's why a lot of people don't like the concept of a hero's journey, or at least the definitive hero's journey, because it's literally been used for like hundreds of years, if not thousands, a couple thousand. And there are other things that people hate for similar reasons. That's why a lot of people don't like the standard, what I like to call the basic fantasy set, the standard fantasy set, which would be the basic casting system. What do you mean basic casting system, Isaiah? You know the one, the more ambiguous one that you're more likely to find in a lot of different works that don't really flesh out a magic system. You know, kind of like sword and sorcery that doesn't get defined. People wave around wands and staffs to cast spells, and you don't really know what they're doing, and they're just doing it. And, that's why some people get tired with those things like that, because they get so used. That's why people are tired of things. Sometimes people are tired of things like, like trolls and goblins and, that D&D style, that Tolkien style that you see with a lot of works, which by no means are bad in any capacity. Just the fact that they've been worn out. And I know this is coming a little bit late in the video, but this is just a little personal thing with me, a little part of my personality that I have. There are a lot of things. I think I mentioned this in the first episode. I might have. Correct me if I'm wrong. But, there are a lot of ideas people have that aren't bad ideas. But sometimes they're, when it comes to writing and magic systems. But the problem is, they hold them as too absolute. They promote these ideas without acknowledging the variance in the way that these things can be executed. They say that there's this execution and that execution, and say, they have to be this way. For instance, even if those things are good, they're not the only way of doing things. And then when you push the idea that these are the way of doing things as opposed to a way, then you start to hurt the variation in the media and the industry, so to speak. For instance, there is... Someone mentioned to me a book. Was it Save the Cat's Beat Sheet, I think? The Beat Sheet one. Which kind of promotes the idea that in a book or in a screenplay or whatever, that you have to have this, you know, this amount of pages, and you have to have this amount of story plot twist, and, you know, the twist comes in this page, the dramatic thing happens on this page, and it has to be this dramatic. People, you know, that extremely formulaic structure. And those structures are good, mind you. No problem with them. It's just that they're so formulaic that they say that, hey, this is the way to do it, and forget everything else. When the problem is, there are so many other different ways of executing it. And then, your wonderful idea might have even been a perfect idea. Let's just assume it is. But what happens now? You promote that idea. For now, we'll just say the beat sheet from Save the Cat. And then you promote that idea to its maximum. You tell everyone, this is the way to do it. You do it this way. And then what happens? A lot of people do it this way. Of course, a lot of people are dissuaded from using it. But by that point, it becomes a standard. And the people who don't use that get a bad rap. Some of them get shunned. Some of them don't get published, regardless of how good their work is, because they don't follow the formulaic format that the industry wants them to follow. You see what I'm saying? So now, not only have you hurt people by, again, these ideas aren't even necessarily bad. Remember that. I'm not beating up these ideas for existing. These are very fair, legitimate ways of doing things. But now, by promoting them as a formulaic standard, we've then alienated people who don't do it. Of course, these people can get along just fine. And, you know, the world's a big place, so even if we promote this one formula, there will always be outliers and things like that, or people who get published anyway, or people who get movies made anyway, and things like that. Those will always be the case. Nothing in the world is absolute. But the problem is, a lot of the people who won't will get alienated. A couple weeks ago, I was on r/writing, and I actually ended up seeing a post from some person whose mother was a very well-established writer in the writing industry. I think they were making, I can't remember if they were making a movie or a Netflix series off of one of her works. And this woman had I can't remember if it was her daughter or her son, but either way, she shared a bunch of sets of advice that you're supposed to follow to get published, to say. And she was saying, well, this is how you do it. She's, you know, she's really, really good. She's very popular, world-renowned. And these are her advice. These are the things that you simply must do to be effective in the writing industry. And one of them, again, was that beat sheet that says you have to use the beat sheet by Save the Cat. That if you don't have it, that if you don't have this rigid, definitive structure, then you cannot get published. And I might be slightly misrepresenting it, but I've read it a few times. And that's ultimately what it said. That's ultimately what that point said. I think it got a lot of awards on Reddit. You might be able to scroll down there on r/writing and find it. It's probably pretty popular. But again, so if you think I'm misrepresenting the idea of how much these formulaic structures are pushed, or how much these, again, with these formulaic structures, that's just an example. Go back to the whole dramatic cost system. Some of these, while not to the same degree, get pushed in a very, very similar way, which we get the same result, which is the ones that don't use this idea, even though there are multiple ways of doing things, we hold up this idea on a pedestal, and then the ones that don't do it get looked down upon, even though they're equally legitimate. Of course, some of them are less structured, again with the beat sheet. Generally, you do want to have a structure, and there are tons of different structures you can follow. But just because you're not using this one definitive structure does not mean you're not using one. You see what I'm saying? See, what if that beat sheet has 8 beats in it, and you want 9? What if your story's shorter, or what if it's a slow grind in the beginning that picks up in the middle, and you only have, say, 5 of them or something like that? You see what I'm saying? And even what you learn in school is, there's the whole rising action, falling action thing, and that's just one that probably the most basic format. But you can have those, and you could take that structure and execute that like 15 different times in one book. You can say you have smaller falling action, smaller rising action, and they can feed into a larger rising action and falling action and in conclusion. You know. And again, these are just examples. Excuse me if this seems like a tangent. But I don't think it is, because while I've switched to talking about the dramatic cost system and the beat sheet or whatever and these structures, the ultimately underlying problem is more or less the same. And that's the issue. Again, because these things aren't bad. It is the way we promote them and say that this is the way to go. And how it, and also how it promotes a kind of cherry picking that we have. So yeah, so ultimately, when you promote these ideas the way you do, these singular ideas, as if they are the way, we only really stand to get hurt from them. If you cannot acknowledge the variants, and a lot of people don't do this intentionally, a lot of people who are in the same, I guess, line of work that I'm in, when it comes to talking about writing in magic systems, they do the same thing, they do a similar thing too, where not all of them, thank God for that, but what they will do sometimes is they will promote their perception of their ideas on how to do things, right? Which is all fair, because we need all the perspectives we can get in that regard. But they don't acknowledge the variance there, that this is not the way, this is a way. And when you do that, well, you run the risk of having the same problem that I just talked about earlier. I've probably been repeating myself a little bit during this episode. Excuse me for that. I think this is it. So I've already brought up the fact that there are different structures when it comes to the beat sheet and everything. But you might ask yourself, well, Isaiah, I have a magic system and I don't want it to be I don't want magic to be used as a plot device as like overly convenient, and so I made the cost dramatic so that it wouldn't risk being overused or being too easy to use. Isaiah, if you say that this is not the only way to do that, how else can you do that? I have a few ideas. Not all of them will work for you. That's true. Again, in fact, you might be in a magic system in which that dramatic cost is probably the best way to go. But keep this in mind. But I have a few for you. We can take the Harry Potter slash... always take the Harry Potter approach. Or rather, the Harry Potter slash... what is it? The Harry Potter slash Star Wars approach. And that could just be... that you have to have your focus. That you have to have your focus, right? Maybe magic takes so much focus to use that you have to try very hard to concentrate. And that means that situations that compromise that concentration make it very difficult to use magic. That's something they use in D&D a lot. In a lot of spell-based systems where you have casting times, you have to be focusing during the entire time you're casting. And if you break that concentration, then, you know, you lose the magic. You know, you lose the spell. It becomes part of the meta, so to speak. I don't think I've made an episode on the meta yet. I'm probably going to do that later. But it kind of, you get what I'm saying. But it adds to the meta to say that if I'm a fighter and there's this guy casting a super powerful spell in front of me, I have to break his concentration. I might not be able to kill him in the span of time that it takes me to, you know, to kill him, but I can break his concentration, or I can distract him. Maybe I can throw off his footing, and that'll distract him again. Now, in some magic system, in some magic systems, they have this category of things. It's a very broad category that I like to call foci. And they are, simply put, a series of other constraint that you have to use or be in contact with to use magic. Now, sometimes these are, and say in D&D, they might be what you call an arcane focus. It is a tool or object that you have to use to focus your magic, to focus your magic in order to use spells. Now, here's the thing. That's just one category of them, of foci. Foci for you could not only be an object or a tool, it could even be a special thing that maybe, let's just say, for example, that that magic in your world is made from, like, fossil fuel or something like that. Like, the fossils of, like, dead beings or whatever. Then you could say that maybe that foci or that foca will be, excuse me, when I call it foca from now on, excuse me, sorry. I've never said it out loud before. I've never had to. Don't laugh. Well, laugh. It's okay. It's okay. It's silly. You can laugh. But, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, okay. Foca is a singular and foci is a plural. There we go. Yeah. Now, again, perhaps, in your fossil fuel-based magic system or something, these foci would probably be some kind of material that is related to that fossil fuel. Maybe it's a literal fossil, or maybe it's oil, or maybe it's the material itself. Other types of foci could include, you know, words. Something that produces resonance or produces meaning that is required throughout the use of that magic. That in Harry Potter, when you're using magic, if I remember correctly, there's the physical focus and mental focus that are facilitated by the wand and the words that you use. Now, neither of them are 100% necessary all the time, but generally speaking, they're the things that strengthen your focus, your physical focus and your mental focus, so that the magic can actually operate. Those would be foci. You can use those, you know, foci. Now, in some magic systems, you have to be in connection with something, with some concept or idea, or even some deity or something like that. I think for the Flash, he has this thing called the Speed Force that he's connected to that makes him super duper fast. His connection with that, you could consider to be a foca. Now, I'm not sure how he increases it. I've been told that the more connected you are to the Speed Force, the faster you get, the more powerful you get in the Speed Force, in the speed. But I don't know how that goes up and down, how you increase or reduce your connection, whether it's voluntary or temporary or what have you. However, if you would like to use that similar idea, for instance, I have a better example. I mentioned deities earlier. Let us say religion. Again, I'm not the biggest on doing religious-based magic systems, but I've learned that I'm better at it than that I give myself credit for. I have a lot of ideas that work for those too. And I think that Speed Force example would be better translated to this, because a deity has a certain set of ideas. Let's say you have to be some kind of take a paladin concept or something like that, or a cleric. But there are ideas and guidelines that you have to follow in terms of beliefs and behaviors that you use to get in contact with that deity. I know, and even in real life, there are things that you do in certain religions that are meant to tap into or communicate with a god, with that deity. For instance, I think in Christianity and Judaism and things like that, there's a whole sequence of prayer, and sometimes there are things that in the Old Testament that they had to do to contact God, or a specific priest or whatever would have to go through a ritual and whatnot to do things. Those are all examples of foca and foci that help them get in contact or get in good terms with that thing that gives them their power, or the thing that they use to get the magic things done, so to speak. Not that the real world is magic or anything like that, but those are just examples, because those religious-based magic systems get their inspiration from these types of real-world things. So net foci could easily be, say, a garment or a tool or material. It doesn't have to be. It could just be what you use to get in connection with get your connection with that deity's power or whatever. Perhaps it is your way of life. Maybe living holier makes you more connected to that deity, to that god. Maybe doing their will kind of moves you up in their hierarchy, so to speak. And that hierarchy is the way that you move up and down with that, you know, strengthen or weaken that foca. Of course, since I mentioned wands earlier, I guess a way of focusing magic can be considered a type of foci too. So, having said that, in a magic system in which you're moving you need magic to move throughout the world or your body or whatever it's focused through could be considered a foca. For instance, your arm. If you shoot blasts through your arm or whatever, if you shoot, for instance, Superman shoots lasers through his eyeballs. His foca for those lasers would be his eyes. They have to be. If his eyes aren't working, then he can't use the laser beam. Those are the thing they conduct through. Now that you've attached a foca to your magic system, when you attach that foca to your magic system, all of a sudden the economy starts to take place. Instead of defaulting to making the cost of magic dramatic, you can make magic more or less effective in the circumstance by the foca and the qualities of strengthening and weakening the foca, whether magic works or not. They do this in I think by this time I would have finished posting all the Avatar episodes, but in Avatar, The Last Airbender, again, their foca is their bodies. It is the thing they use to move the chi or the ki or whatever it is to move to bend the elements. It is, you know, in their bodies, and that energy flows to their bodies through the chakras. So their bodies, and more specifically their chakras of the foca, are each foci, and they are limited. They are either limited or strengthened by how well that flow operates, whether those chakras are opened and closed and whatnot, as well as how well the chi flows through their body. Oh wow. That was long. I'm kind of, excuse me if it seems like I kind of went on tangent and skipped around a little bit, throughout the course of this episode. It's getting kind of long, but, I'm kind of working on a little new structure. I don't want to, like, slice up my episodes a lot. I feel like it's more beneficial, even though it seems less structured, it's more beneficial for me to just talk like that. I feel like that's the best thing for the podcast structure. If I was making videos, I'd probably do them differently. But for this podcast structure, I feel like this should be okay. I mean, if not, you guys can let me know what you guys think on Twitter or on Reddit. But well, that's all I've got for today. Remember, none of these things are bad. They are a way, not the way. And there are always other things you can do to get a similar result. And if we... only facilitate this one kind of thing, then we will hurt our originality, and we will hurt the industry that the diversity of the industry we work in terms of ideas. But yeah, I think that's all for now. This is Isaiah from Magic System Monday, and until next time, I'll see you later.